Okay, I know you touched on this a little before, but maybe you could go in a little more detail on how you viewed the foreign allied forces, either that you came in contact with or that you knew about.
Well, the only ones I've seen that I really was familiar with was just to be other Navy, you know, like Australians and the British. So I didn't run into any other, as far as ground forces and that, the only ones I ever were able to tell, I was able to talk to were the Americans, or the Army. I talked to those quite a bit. But they were, I didn't run into, you know, like any of the others, like just talking to ours, I got a good idea what they were doing, what was going on. But I had the experience of one, we were going to, they have, during the war, they had these shows in different places. It would be like, you've seen Bob Hope put on a show and so on. So there was one that was Irving Berlin, was This Is the Army show, which was all celebrities, movie stars and so on. And they take those right to the combat area. So we were in the Philippines, and so what, we were able to go, but being on a carrier, all we had to do was get in, we got a small boat and then transfer it over to a LCI, which is a landing craft infantry, and one was one of the dropped the front. And it was LCT. But anyway, they had some soldiers that were on there that had been just completed the invasion 2 days before that. So they were going with us over to the show. We talked about them. And you got a good feeling about what went on. Because we were surprised, you know, because when we first hit Lady, it didn't have a lot of resistance there. And so just asking the guy, well, how did it go in there? And he said, well, one, and he said, we were really, we had pretty easy when we first went in. But then we got in and farther in the jungle, and we couldn't keep, every tree had a sniper in it. They said, they're picking us off, you know, and we were too open. So we were able to get in behind some trees and get ourselves dug in. And he said, everything was going real well. We started picking them off. Advanced only in yards, a little bit in yards and pickups. He said, then the Marines come behind us and almost stepped on our heads and ran and got themselves all killed. They were gung-ho. Yeah, they were. And they were taught that way. They go, they rush through. He said, I don't know how many kicked themselves killed. You know? Yeah. So that's the difference in arms, the forces. And that was an infantry one, but talking about Marine coming in. But I didn't, as far as any, you know, other countries or anything.
What was the overall objective of your ship?
Well, the ships were, this is a problem when I had the war started. Was the very first part of the war, we only had, some of the big, they were big, were considered big carriers. They're really not considered big carriers in today's. But there was the Lexington and the Hornet and the Wasp and a couple others. And the thing was that, you see, they were out when Pearl Harbor was invaded. And so they really needed them. But the thing was that when they'd go back out, because the Japanese were going to fight the Japanese, and the Japanese leader even go get set up for any invasions, which they weren't really ready, except Midway, I guess, in the first one. But they had to replace planes, see. And so you have five carriers out there, and you're losing, and they were losing a lot of planes every day. They'd lose planes. Well, there was no way to get planes out to them. And so they couldn't, and what they were doing is they'd take one of the carriers, and it'd get rid of all his planes, and it'd have to go all the way back to to Pearl Harbor, north of North Island, Naval base or air station, and they'd have to get the planes there, and then they had to ferry them all the way out, and then they had to take them off on, they had to leave enough room so that they could taxi them if they were going to fly them. If not, they just have to go to an island and lift them off by boom. Well, I was real slow, and they'd have to have the island secure so they could do it, because they couldn't, the distance, you know, couldn't fly that far. So when one of the parts I was telling you about ferrying was just ferrying troops and our people, and this was the other one, was ferrying planes. Well, those were a couple of ships that I knew that had that duty, and it was a very boring, but they would just do that. They would load up the planes, get them out, and dump them, and turn around and come back, and they just were doing that, ferrying planes back and forth. Well, when we got there, it was a secret. They were guarded. Even on a ship, they had guards on them. And it was the first kind of a missile that they were going to try. And more like a drone, you know, but something like that. We were guessing all the time. The Marines would let you near and tell them what it was. But anyway, we brought those down to Guadalcanal. And then when we went back, we had got our own squadron. So we trained our squadron. And we had about 40 planes, 35 planes, which is so many torpedo bombers and so many fighters. And so we had FM2s and TBMs, and torpedo bombers. Well, we only had a 500-foot deck. It was just only 500 feet long. And compared to, you see these pictures like this one here, you can see the difference in that ship is an aircraft carrier against an aircraft carrier today. Well, that's an escort carrier, but even this has a better idea of the difference of sizes of carriers. Anyway, getting off the subject there, but we had a squadron, and the squadron just got into action. And if you want to shut it up, I can. Yeah, these were designed to ferry planes, to ferry troops, and also then when they were put on squadrons, and we were lucky, we only did about 3 ferry jobs, and then we were given a squadron. And the squadrons were actually air coverages for submarine in the Atlantic, were the one carrier that captured the German submarine. That's what they were used for in the Atlantic specifically. Only they had no squadron at all. All they had was planes that would for spotters and to spot the submarine. When they got in the Atlantic, they cut that submarine, the German submarine, down to practically nothing. But in the Pacific, you had so much more water and so many different places of battles going on that our squadrons would do that. But we had fighter squadron. We had a couple of guys who were aces who shot down, you know, as many as, you know, 10 or 15 planes each, you know, and there were a lot of them. We lost an awful lot of pilots. They were expendable. And they're all young guys, you'd see. You were pretty much, all you had to have was a high school education, and they'd send you into one of these, they had one here in Billings, I think the B-6 school, had one in Montana Tech, B-6. What you did is you trained for the Navy Air Force, fighter squadron, and so they send you right over, and they were you know, very effective, because they did all those besides firing planes, besides firing troops, besides firing, you know, as far as wounded and so on like that, and other supplies sometimes that they put on certain things they had to get somewhere, they put them on there, and put on trucks and things like that. And then, besides that, giving you squadrons and using squadrons to fight, actually attack, which they did in Leyte. That was the last sea battle, they say, that ever will be. But in Leyte, that's what those planes, the ones that turned the whole Japanese fleet around, sunk some of their battleships and their cruisers and with aerial torpedoes and scraping, bombing. They got their money's worth out of them, and that was, you didn't have a lot of respect from other sailors who had been in service a long time, regular Navy guys, you know, he's calling them bucket of bolts and all these other, how the hell is this thing, how does it stay afloat, you know, and stuff, and so they were used to bigger ships and so on, so they didn't think these would work, but these actually, those CDs actually did as well, if not better, than our big carrier. And, they were, and we lost a lot of them, though, that they lost. They lost four alone in Lady Sea Battle. All together, I think they lost about nine within that whole one. In that 1 month, we lost about nine of these at one time. And they go down. One of them was hit, was a torpedo, and then went down in within a half hour. It was down 25 minutes, sunk completely out of sight. And then they didn't get too many survivors. But they were what they were designed for is what really had a real part in winning the war, because otherwise they'd run out of planes, and they didn't have any more carriers to do that. They had a tough time without the CVEs. They never got any stronger.
Can you describe your ship specifically? Describe CVE.
Yeah, carrier vessel escort, and called a lot of other things. It was the one that seemed up here. This best book I've written on these, and I can tell exactly where I was, which ships were with me, and everything else by when you read where the invasions were, and see like this here tell you that's who was participating and the names of the ships and so on. This tells you what your air coverage or your screen with the destroyers and battleships and so on like that. And what's neat about this, you can tell it's accurate. You can tell where you were on that day and what ships are with you. A lot of guys will say, I'll run into people and say, well, I was on the so-and-so. I think I remember your name, the name of that ship, and it would be maybe a destroyer. And I'd say, yeah, I'll check and see what you... Or somebody might say, well, my brother or my father was on the so-and-so, and I think he was in the Lady Battle or one of the other battles. Say, well, I'll go check. I see, and I look my book and find out if he was on a destroyer and who was with this task force, and that was going into 1078. I don't know which invasion that was. But what I was saying about signal for zigzag courses, this would do. You had to be able to read that, and then you change courses about every 15 minutes at least. That was to keep the Japanese subs from following you or trying to set you up. And so about every 15 minutes, you take a different course. But they really did. This is like this guy, this preface and the introduction into this is, this is some of the names they call them. They call them baby flat tops, and they call them jeep carriers. And they call them Kaiser coffins is what they really were naming it, because the Kaiser built all these. And they call them Kaiser coffins, especially the one, I don't know, like one going down 25 minutes, and the others went down pretty fast too. That went down. But the objective of that was, it lived up to it. Thing we were a little discouraged because ship I was on earned 7 battle stars, and we got the Navy Commendation Ribbon, which is honor, a high ranking medal, and we have a combat, I don't know how many combat badges we have. And then what we were disappointed is all the ships, almost every one of the ships that you mentioned in that book that I was with, and when we were with them, with that same task force, that they all were given the presidential citation, and we didn't get the presidential citation. Yeah. And we can't understand it. We were in more battles than most of them, and it was really, I kind of, going to our reunions, guys talk about it, some of the officers said, you know, there was a lot of dissension about the new captain we got. And they transferred our captain and admirals real fast because, but anyway, there was a lot of dissension on the new, it's sort of like, I relate it to my experience as a principal, and a new one comes in, takes over, you know, and he's running the school, and he's a dog compared to the old guy that was good, a good guy, and our captain was a good guy, and we got this other guy who was just, and I think they transferred him because they didn't know what else to do. But anyway, he didn't complete any of the paperwork on the battles and that, and our captain was transferred too fast to be able to do it, and our admirals were transferred real fast, and we were in Okinawa, and they transferred our admiral right out from under us, and so they feel that, and this new captain we had, he's sort of like, all right, what's his name's no longer captain, he used to make that all the time. Gerber's no longer the captain of the ship. I'm the captain of the ship. And he resented Gerber because Gerber was got all kinds of accolades and awards and things, and he was a great guy. He was a guy that on Midway, won the Battle of Midway. Gerber was a pilot, and he's the one that was able to do the calculations and everything, and said they won't send the squadron because it's too far, they'd never be able to go and come back. And old Gerber, he figured out a course and everything to be able to send the squadron to bring him back. You know, he got a big award for that, but he was a great guy. And he figured this other guy was so jealous he just didn't complete the paperwork. So we sit, and I can show you this on pages of where the Lady Sea Battle is. We're in there, and our admiral was directing part of it. We still didn't even get we didn't get the presidential citation. Almost everybody there did. We had a captain or an admiral who had been captain of the Lexington, and one of them was captain of the Hornet. And the one that was the captain of the Lexington, his name was Admiral Sample. He was the captain of the Lexington got, you know, battled, beat up pretty bad. And then when he went onto another ship and it was captain, and it got beat up. And then they made him an admiral, and they put him aboard the Santee, the Swanee, or the Santee, which is one of these other carriers. And he was on there when it got hit with the suicide planes. And then they transferred him to us, and he was on our ship, and he was directing the battle at Lady. And so our planes. He went out one day just to go over and see what's going on in Lady, and he was not supposed to. He was supposed to stay and direct everything, you know, be in charge of everything there. And he decided to go up in one of the planes, torpedo bombers, and let's see if I find it. But he was going up in one of the torpedo bombers, and the Japanese fire. 40 millimeter right in the turret, almost it blew him, you know, he got cut up all over his picture of him. But he was 7 days at Venice, or no, it wasn't that, it was a, which one is it, don't believe in medical, anyway, he was one of those, and he didn't really want any medical attention, and we thought it was because of his religion. It was because he would have got chewed out, because he probably could see. We'll probably break him down and send him back, but he's not supposed to do that. But anyway, I'll find his picture here. We can do that later. But anyway, he was in that, and he got wounded pretty bad. And then after they took, he went back. He didn't get off then, but he went off, and he got back onto another carrier, the Swanee. The Swanee got hit, and he went on. Went over on to the Santee again, and he got hit. And then, when the war ended, he was at the end of the war. It was 2 days after the war had ended. He and the captain of the Swanee wanted to take a ride over Tokyo and see what it looked like. They never come back. And they found him. They found his skeleton. They thought he went to the sea. They looked for you know, days around the sea. So. He was found out in out in the hills somewhere in Japan, and was all growing over and everything where he was. And the only way they got identified him, skeleton, was his Annapolis ring. I mean, it was Annapolis ring. But a guy, I would venture to say, he probably had more decorations than had been in more battles than probably most any of the men or officers in the Navy at that time. And the other one was the same, what was battle. He was in all the battles too. They took him off at Okinawa, but he'd been in every battle from the beginning all the way to Okinawa, which was the end. a lot of battles.
What was your role on the ship, and what were your specific duties?
Well, I was a coxswain, and means that I was in charge of crews for as far as maintenance and so on, the painting and cleaning and so on like that. And then besides that, I was the coxswain on the captain's gig, and I used to have to take care of it, and was on call all the time for when we're in port, and I have to take him wherever he wanted to go, and I take him in the whale boat, and that was what my main job was, to be coxswain of the whale boat and the deck crew and the gun. I was also captain on the gun. But it was 40mm pointer and trainer. I was both those pointer and trainer. I have to be a pointer, and next day I'd be a trainer. So. But I had a good picture of the whale boat here going down. But anyway, it was captain's gig. Most big ships have a skimmer, as they used to call them. Pretty powerful boat, but inboard, it's an inboard motor, you know, cabin, and most of the big ships have those are captain's gigs that way. Ours is just an open whale boat, and it's rough to drive, rough to sit on the back. I had to sit on the back, stand on the back, and hang on, and I had the tiller, and in the rough seas, it'd be throwing, and it's throwing, about throw you out of there. And he'd always yell at me. You get it in too rough a sea, especially in the Lithi there. He'd say, hey, find a smoother road than this, you know. So you'd have to turn it. He was quite a guy. But anyway, that was my main job, was the gun, guns, decks, and the whaleboat. Stood all my watches on gun. We don't watch. Well, we'd be in, depending on what area we're in, we're four on and eight off, and it was four on and four off, and in general quarters it was just not off.
What were some of your most vivid memories of your service?
Well, I guess you'd say that the thing that, you know, more impressed in your mind is the danger that you were in, and especially when you were being under attack or at general quarters, and how everybody reacts, and then you see everybody and you see their faces how tight they are, and those were, as far as vivid, I remember, like, living, see the guy standing next to me. The most fear I had was in this one here. This picture here shows, you see, I drew those planes in there. This was my gun, where I was captain in the general quarters. These are two suicide planes. One went over and the other side, when they come like this out of the sky, across, and they were diving for our elevator, which was where you saw that 77-pound painted. Mm-hmm. They were diving for that. It was a phony elevator. We had it just painted on there. And they were diving for it, and he missed, and he blew up just on the other side of, this was on this side, and he blew up right about here. But he got all the men, scattered them with shrapnel. And this one hit right here at this lookout stand, right there. Mm-hmm. And my gun was right there. So I was only about 20 feet, not even 15, 20 feet from it when he blew up, when he hit us. He took the lookout, was a good friend of mine. took his head right off, and he scattered all the shrapnel along all the men that were there. And I think we had about 12 or 13 wounded, and there was only about 15 of us over. So I was lucky. I didn't, not sitting on the gun, just, you know, that would, but if, that was one very good. Remember, I thought we were in the water. Then we had other ones. There was two went over and bombed us, and dropped bombs and missed us. And that's scary. And then more of them when they come in to strafe you, you know, and that's scary. But the other one is the other part, the scary parts was sometimes when they tell you, you know, that there were submarines, and you kind of hate to go to bed that night, you know, if you didn't know. And I used to get wonder, if this thing goes upside down, which way do I get out of here, you know? But those were, they're exciting, but they bothered you, you know.
What, if anything, reminded you of home the most?
Well, the only thing that, you mean what would make me start thinking about home was only, well, the holidays, when you miss your holidays and you're on a ship, that's when you'd really, you know, reminisce about home, what it would be like Christmas, three Christmases in a row. And you never get any mail, hardly, you know, we would get any mail for, we got our Christmas packages about, let's see, you're supposed to mail them early, and we'd get them about in March. Again, and they'd probably been moved three or four times from island to island, and because they had such secrecy of where you were, and so they'd ship them out from what they call Fleet Post Office in San Francisco. Well, they'd go out and they'd say, well, Marcus Island would be, say, in Hawaii. Well, and they'd unload it there, and we wouldn't get to Hawaii, so they'd keep it, and they'd find out that, no, it's out in the south around in Marshall Island somewhere, and well, they'd take it. You get it on an island, say, no, they were in Iwo Jima. They move it to Iwo Jima and say, no, they've now gone to Okinawa. Well, they didn't have a place to stay in Okinawa because they haven't secured it. But it would be thrown out on the beach. It was rotten stuff, was, you know, people sent food, you know, and they'd go like this. and it was run over, stuff was smashed. Sometimes they open the mailbag, and we had maybe supposedly about 20 or 25 presents, supposedly, and a lot of it was just home cooking stuff. Mm-hmm. And oh God, and it'd all be wet and all be that, and then you'd try to dig to get the mail, that would come a little bit better shape, but sometimes you could hardly read it, it'd been wet and hot and everything. But the remind me was just being home would be Christmas, and used to, and everybody had the same feeling, you know. The officers would say, well, what would you be doing, Joe, if you're home? And then I'd say, missing that. Say, what are you guys from Texas? What do you do? Yeah, there's snow. that's the parts that come up, you know.
What, if anything, made you feel farthest from home?
Well, I guess that, I guess it would be just, I was really depressed after this one battle. I was really depressed, and I thought, you know, I think next, you know, you're starting to figure the odds on, you know, whether you're going to make it or not, and when you lose somebody,
sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. Take your time.
Yeah. So, but I guess just part of the time too. Whenever I left the port, I felt I'm getting farther away from home. You know? So, but that's those other things that.
people you're with.
Yeah.
You know, I never see home, you know.
Yeah. How did this affect your ability to perform your job, meaning just the things that made you feel alienated from home, made you feel like you weren't anywhere near home? Did this affect your ability to perform your job?
No, it would be, probably be, motivate you to be doing something else, you know, that you'd get involved with. We played, we had a lot of, we played, you know, games, a lot of games, get into a basketball game, get into touch football. We had one guy go to the reunion every year, and he would play touch football, and he went out for a pass, and he went over the side. Man, jump! That's not very long, you know. You look at that catwalk. They call it the catwalk. It's from the deck to the catwalk over. He went right over. They had to pick him up with the destroyer. I still see him every year. We go down to the reunion. He's a banker in Kansas, and we playing touch football on the flight deck. Guy's coffer. He was running like this, and all the way over the catwalk and down into the water. And the destroyer. One of your destroyer escorts, they'd call them and they'd come and pick them up. You're lucky. But that would be, just find something else to occupy yourself. We didn't have a lot of recreation types of things, you know, that we could do, maybe could do those, but we didn't have, not nowadays. In fact, you go put on a McDonald's and get a milkshake and a hamburger on the ship, you know. You can email anybody, or you can pick up a long distance call them. I mean, we were, just completely lost in that. This is where we used to spend our recreation type of things like this. You see that? That's not a nude beach. That's any beach where you go, because there's no girls there, you know. And that's where we did. You see this? That's beer cans.
You kidding me?
Our beer party, they give you three or four beers when you go over, and you'd have playing softball, and that's what they do, they play a little bit of this. And these are our officers, and this guy from Billings, Barney Berger, and the guy that was in charge of all this stuff, his name is Barney Berger, he's this guy right here, the miller, he's from Billings.
Okay.
Yeah, he just died a couple months ago. No, a year ago, and he's from, he was over in Lewistown, and he was the city athletic director of Lewistown.
Oh, really?
You go in the Metro, his picture's on the Hall of Fame referees, you ever see that go in there?
Mm-hmm.
On the very first one, on if you walked in, it's on the far side, down at that other end, it's the very first picture on the top, Mr. Barney Burton.
Really?
Yeah. He was a master at arms. He did a good job. He was a specialist. He went to the University of Montana. He was a kicker for the U. And by having gone to the U and a little college education, that's what he got to be. But that's a beat. That's for your recreation party, and that's a few beers.
I'd say so.
Probably some one of the natives probably come by and, build a house out of it, that's what you'd have to do, is just, go the other way. I didn't gamble. A lot of guys, we had a casino on it, it was not legal, and it was, you'd have one of these guys that run it, card game, and what they'd do is they'd even furnish, they'd furnish sandwiches for you. They had a deal with the cook. So-and-so comes down tonight, and when they call it in the Bosemacher, it was forward. They had all these coils of rope, so you'd make a table out of it, and they had about four poker tables called, go around and run it like a casino, and he'd collect on each pot that goes in, he'd take a split for the house, and he'd go, oh, you're at the post office mailing money home, they said. We had a post office around there, but we never had to wait till you got to an island. You got to get anything mailed,
Mm-hmm.
I showed you a whale boat, didn't I?
Yeah.
I'm sure we want it. We had a priest on our ship for chaplain, Catholic priest. They used to have other. Yeah, you go see him. A lot of guys when that was. Some people need a little more counseling than others, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he would. He was a good guy. He was, really did a lot of good things for the guys. And he'd try. We had some other kinds of recreation once in a while. Get in port. Now we had Red Skeleton show come forward one time, put on a show for us. And then we used to have whenever we were close to where there would be some celebrities or something, we could get some of them to come and just entertain. Otherwise, you watch the same movies over and over and over again. And you can't get any new ones until you get to port somewhere and checks or exchange them with other ships. Mostly that's what we'd do. We'd get into a port and we'd have... So there were six of us always operated together, six of these small carriers. And there are three groups, six. So we had 18 carriers. But when you get into a port, like Ulithi, then I would, you know, they would signal on it, get across, what movie you got. Who wants to exchange moves? It was sort of flashing all of them going back and forth. It was nothing classified, but it was always, what kind of movie do you got? Trace the movies. You know?
What was the movie that you'd say they showed the most?
Oh, well, if you go to a song first, it was a song. But when we left San Francisco, we had a guy on our ship who was, dad was vice president of Standard Oil.
Right.
And he said, he used to come down and he talked to the captain. He said, so he says, you can have your guys go to San Francisco to three music stores and go in and pick out any record you want. And I'll, you know, he'd pay for it. So I went down and the guys were going through and picking out records. And they'd check with the other stores and see so that we didn't have 10 of the same record, you know. So we'd have maybe two of some records. So get in the mess hall. And the song was the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe. And it was a great song at that time. And then there was a lot of Western, and a lot of guys just hate it, you know, country Western. And then there was other ones where it was jitterbugging and that kind. And those guys, some of the Southerners, did not like that at all. They don't have the country Western. We didn't have Johnny Cash, but it was the same kind of stuff, worse though. And so... they threw our records away, so, yeah. And you play it, had them in one place, and so when you'd be able to go to the mess hall and play records, you know, it would be lunch or something, or dinner. But you had your choice, so you'd get them. And so somebody, I'm tired of listening to these songs, you know, these Western ones, and so threw them away. So the next day, somebody got all the, you know, the Jitterbug ones and so on like that. They threw them away, except for two songs we had. One was the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe, and that played forever. only two of them left. This was what it looked like. This is from our ship, shooting fire in Queens. I had some pictures that were separate that I had taken that we took from another ship, but it's hard to see what's going on there. But that's the one we got hit before I showed the other two.
Oh, is that the one?
One side, one side. And you see what everybody's doing?
Yeah.
People running like this. These guys are looking up and saying, it's coming here.
That's right.
And these guys are back there running, it's coming here. So you're going passing each other on the flight deck. Like we did, we stood in our, we had to stay in our guns and we were firing. These guys were the gun, or the plane crew, and they're running. They're running this way and this way, you know, they're going, and there's a bomber, one of the bombers that went over, dropped some bombs, this one goes. So we had a lot of them, you know, but I say, those are things you remember. That kid that killed my friend on that lookout, he's from Oregon, he'd only been on the ship about 3 months. He was 17.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple, you know, some of the others were just hard. You know.
Yeah.